I'm Rob Westervelt. This is Security Wire Weekly for December 8th, 2010. Mobile device security. This edition, well-known security expert Win Schwarto joins us to talk about mobile device security.
Now's the time to really start looking at how you're going to lock these devices down, because number one, they're here to stay, the bad guys are here to stay, and if you choose to reject the last 30 years of history, it's going to be on you because the bad guys are coming.
Thanks for joining us. Well, we've heard a lot about the threats and risks associated with the skyrocketing use of smartphones and other mobile devices. Employees are bringing them to work in increasing numbers, and they expect them to connect to the company network. Win Schwarto says it poses a major shift in IT architecture that demands a different approach to security. Win is currently chairman of the board of directors at Mobile Active Defense. Now, he's promise not to make this a pitch for his company. Instead, we talk about how mobile platforms will be the next big target of attackers and how enterprises can address security to the wide-ranging devices that are in the workplace these days. It's not just BlackBerries anymore, as you know. Here's what Win had to say. I had a chance to read one of your recent columns regarding mobile security. You say that the enterprise is facing unprecedented threats and risks to its dynamic mobile infrastructure. We've heard about some of the risks. I'm hoping that you can go into what these threats are, because so far it seems like none of the attacks that we've seen have been really catastrophic in nature.
Well, therein is the problem, and I don't mean offense by this, is what we're hoping to do is avoid a repeat of everything that we've done for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions you had asked earlier was, are we just seeing a repeat? Now, let's go back to the early days. We'll just say PCs. Oh, let's everybody have one. That's all fun and everything. And then in 84, the conceptual idea of what was going to happen with viruses and automatically mutating software was developed by Dr. Fred Cohen as part of a PhD thesis, and it was the proof of concept. And then at that point, it was, 4 years later, we started seeing real, honest-to-God viruses in the wild, more of lark and joke than they were of something hostile, and that took a few years to occur. Mm-hmm. So up to that point, it was, no, everything's fine. We've got a panacea. So as the industry evolved over the years, we'd introduce new technology, and then some of us would say, what's going to happen at this? When is this going to happen? Look out for this. And we ought to start really looking at security issues. And this goes back to the late 80s. And the naysayers were saying, well, we haven't seen anything yet. And that same mantra has been used for the last 25 years. And it has been sort of a kind of a combination of apathy, arrogance, and ignorance that we've been waiting for the disaster and then react to it. So in this particular case, we've ended up in a different situation. We're much more in what I have called the perfect storm. Number one, technology is here. It has become an integral part of every single bit of business and personal life. That's a given. With the growth of these devices, these mobile devices of whatever flavor we want to talk about, we are seeing an absolutely unprecedented adaptation and growth never before seen in the history of technology. It's not like waiting in the early 80s, oh, we'll have a million PCs, we'll have 5 million, we'll have 10 million. Right now, we are looking at a population of close to 4 billion intelligent endpoints in the next 2.5-3 years. Mm-hmm. We know this is coming. 600 and some million of them, these devices were sold in 2010 alone, not even including what's going to happen with the Christmas season. So we're dealing, number one, with massive, massive amounts of numbers. Number two, we're dealing with an infrastructure, the carriers, who are not involved in the security process. And I'm not criticizing them. It's just their job is to provide QoS, quality of service, from point A to point B. thank you, and we'll handle everything else. And that's what the carrier's job has been for almost 100 years.
Okay.
Now, number three, the bad guys have already shown their cards. The Internet is not fun and games with little kids and teens and early generation hacking types that are testing technology. It has become a serious, serious business measured in the tens of billions of dollars. And we know the bad guys are here, and we know they're starting to target these devices. The last part is we've already seen the proof of concept stuff, already seen some of the sophisticated laboratory designs that have shown on how to do an awful lot of these types of attacks. Now, they're an early generation. They're not as sophisticated as Stuxnet yet. Everybody's learning their way.
Right.
But we look at simple things. Jailbroken phones. Got it. Jailbroken phones are a definite security problem. We are seeing, I don't know how many millions, I just don't know the answer to this question, of personal devices that do not meet any security or corporate compliance standard being connected to corporate networks that already have their built-in security and compliance. So we're seeing millions and millions of these already breaking the security models that they've spent a decade and however much money to achieve. So they're breaking it themselves, and they're scared. And then number four, when we look at some of the hostile stuff that has already been deployed in the mobile world, the best estimates now are roughly 20%, maybe more, of all of the apps in the app stores are infected with unknown, unwanted, unapproved, and sometimes hostile software. You take all of this stuff, and for anybody to say, well, we haven't seen anything yet, I would argue is then you are blind to the last 30 years of the history of computers. This is happening. We're at the beginning of the curve, and this one is going to be a very steep hysteresis curve, not a mild, gentle one.
Quick question here to follow up.
Yeah.
There seems to be a little bit of a difference, I think, with this space in terms of you've got fragmented platforms out there. You've got Apple, BlackBerry, Google, Android, Symbian, Microsoft now coming out with its own platform. And if you look at the global numbers, I think Symbian still holds as the market leader out there in terms of the number of people that have Symbian phones. So as a cyber criminal, it seems like with a fragmented market like that, it would be very difficult, at least at this point, to pull off an attack that would be lucrative.
Let's address Symbian number one. Symbian is the number one communications endpoint in the world, not smartphones yet.
Okay.
So they don't even have a tablet device yet. Their smartphone entry is they've stated publicly they're going to give it a go, but it's going to have a dubious, in my opinion, at this point, acceptance. The smartphone market, I guess a year or so ago, Rob and I had, we were all talking, and Rob's our CTO, and he and I were going off on some conceptual stuff. And I made the statement a year ago, that it's going to be not as much of a split market as you're suggesting. It's going to be a two-platform market. It's going to be Apple and Android. So it looks like at this point, if we look at just a year later, where are we today? Symbian is talking about doing an introduction of a smart device. Great. Got it. BlackBerry is talking a tablet and doing some additional opening up. Got it. Understood. Microsoft has made a colossal failure with WP7. There is absolutely zero way that anybody can make WP7 secure in a corporate network. The fundamental under-the-hood technological operating system methodology they employ prohibits that. It is a pure consumer device, and they have made, in my opinion, a colossal mistake. So let's get back to the platforms that matter. What's really driven this whole thing was Apple, and there were two real big things that really got it going, in my opinion. Number one, it was cool. real simple. It was cool, and right. Everybody said, I got to have one of these things.
Yep.
So even, you know, Gen 1.0s of any of these devices, the cool factor kicked in. And what we're seeing from corporations is really three dynamics. One is the C-level folks. Hey, I just bought one of these cool devices. I need to be able to connect to the corporate network. And IT is struggling, and then the IS department as well is going, whoa, wait a minute, we got a problem here. But because the mobile space is so new to so many people, connecting these devices to their corporate networks is almost an a priori given, because the restrictive capabilities have not been implemented and designed yet at the corporate level, and they're going, oh my God, I'm out of compliance, what am I going to do? And a lot of these guys are scared IT-less, if you know what I mean. You've got 150 arguably different implementations of Android based upon carrier and hardware.
But that doesn't play into the whole point where, okay, now you've got a schizophrenic operating system that's taking off, and it would be even more, it makes it even more difficult for an attacker to pull off lucrative attacks.
Let me just finish up and I'll explain why.
Sure.
I read the study last Thursday or Friday, and I forget who put it out. It was just one of the research groups, and they were doing a query. For the tablet markets, which way are you going to go? iDevice or Android? 85% are saying Apple. So that is the platform of choice that looks like it's going to end up being in the for the enterprise at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all fine and dandy, but from an application standpoint, back to the schizophrenic issue on Androids. The schizophrenia is not about how an application is run or loaded and installed. The application portion of the code is the same. It has to be. They have to have application cross-platform compatibility. It's the implementation of it and the back end about what do you do to make it secure and compliant? How do you implement this into a secure enterprise or a compliant enterprise? And that is where we're seeing the difference in the code bases for the different versions of Android. So applications is the common denominator. The implementation and the back end of it is where we're seeing the complete schizophrenia.
I see. So if an attack is pulled off, more than likely it would be pulled off at the point where the mobile application needs to go and grab its data, the server that it needs to tap into.
Well, you know, what the attack looks like doesn't matter at this point. We can get into all of that. But it's a unwanted piece of software that has a payload of some sort, yes.
Okay.
And that would be inside of the applications. And as Rob says, the application stores are the greatest hostile software delivery mechanism ever created by men. Because that's how this stuff is being done right now. And the other thing to keep in mind, there's a complete misnomer on the streets out there that, oh, Apple vetted the app software, we're good.
That's right, and they kind of do some sandboxing as well.
Well, their sandboxing that they do is internal. We'll get into that level in a sec. The problem is that people are under the belief that the software has been vetted, as there's been code review.
Mm-hmm.
There is no code review by any app store. Does not exist. So, and I'm not knocking Apple because that's not their business model. But the approval process for apps in the app store is pretty straight ahead. Number one, they look at, does the code do what it's supposed to do? Here's the marketing brochure. Here's the product. Let's test it. Okay, it does what it's advertised to do. Does it violate any of Apple's operating rules? And that is where some of the sandboxing comes in especially iOS 4.x. Does it read from unapproved areas? And if it does, then that's part of Apple's rejection process, if it does that. However, what it doesn't do is look into non-advertised features. So let's say I've got an app that does it. It's a small game and does exactly what it's supposed to do, and it does it nicely, and I want to put it out there for free. Mm-hmm. But inside of there, my payload is a completely different story. The payload is a sub-app, if you will, that'll do anything it damn pleases, and it's not going to get rejected by Apple because there's no code review. So we got hostile code in the wild. And in the Android store, it's even worse because there is virtually no oversight at all. So when people are downloading apps to their phones, they don't know what they're getting at all.
The one thing I've heard, and I've talked to some pen testers who've been testing some of these mobile applications, and they say that it's not even malicious in nature. It seems like many of the app developers are repeating many of the same mistakes that were made for software developed for desktop.
From a security standpoint, there is no difference between hostile code and bad programming.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that gets back to what the payload is. Is the payload something that's an oops in programming and going to cause an event? Yeah, maybe. And this is historical. We've seen this several times over on each next version of operating systems and complexity. The type of apps and the type of hostile code we're seeing now is not sophisticated. It's simple. We're in the early beta testing of hostile code, if you will. The bad guys are in the early phases of this. In fact, one of the U.S. intelligence agencies, before RSA in 2010, they wanted to do a test, and they set up a little dummy thing and submitted some code to Apple, and it was some application, free game. And they wanted to find out and verify how bad was the security or the code review testing process.
Mm-hmm.
And so inside of their code, the game did its thing, and it had a phone home routine inside of it. And all it did was dial a number that the intelligence agency was controlling, and they could monitor the number of calls, and they got tens of thousands of calls to this number, unbeknownst to users or Apple. So it's the early testing of how to exploit these devices is well underway, and the point that we've been making is now's the time to really start looking at how you're going to lock these devices down, because number one, they're here to stay, the bad guys are here to stay, and if you choose to reject the last 30 years of history, it's going to be on you because the bad guys are coming.
One of the issues is that many of these smartphones have limited CPU resources, bandwidth limitations, so you can't really, I guess, apply the same kind of security software, anti-malware software to the smartphone that we've been doing to the desktop. So what is the answer? Because, you know, we do hear from McAfee and Intel now, you know, hyping a little bit of the hardware-based security, the chip-based security. Is that the answer, or is there another way to do it?
There's only one way to do it. The problem, as you're pointing out, is a little bit more complex, and let me just cover a couple of the basics. Number one, CPU resources, that's certainly a problem, which then brings up a screen. Do I need the screen on? Do I need the screen off? And that affects battery life. You got all of those issues, absolutely. But there's also more issues that need to be considered. In a conventional model, and I'm sitting here right now with three laptops with me, and they're all doing their background AVG download and update databases and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can take the approach that I'll put a McAfee thing on my smartphone, but now I'm going to be eating up a ton of bandwidth as well. And do I want to be using all the bandwidth up and down all the time and all the sanity checking? And how often do I do it? Because on my PCs, I can do it as often as I want, and it's invisible in the background because they have prioritization routines built into them, so they don't eat up all my bandwidth while I'm using it for other purposes. have any of that in this space. The other big problem that you've got in this space is that these are single-user devices. So the conventional models of being able to reallocate or properly protect various types of resources on the devices does not exist. It's a single-user environment. The other problem that you've got is these are not true multitasking environments. They, you know, I don't care what Steve Jobs says, the iDevices are not true multitasking. They have approved 7 proprietary kernel-based APIs for internal multitasking use. Everything else is application pause. Mm-hmm. So if everything is application pause, and I don't choose to update or use my security controls, simple antivirus, anti-spam, whatever it is, if I don't choose to use it, I'm SOL. I effectively have nothing. It's back to the user equation. And that's a failed model that we all should recognize, and McAfee should really know better. The other problem that you have is that all of these things can be turned off by the user exceedingly simply. Just turn them off, ignore them. They got in my way. I don't have the time. Whatever all the 30 years of excuses we've got, we're going to see in these devices the same that we have. So on-device is not going to work. Sandboxing is not security. It is not going to work. It's bypassable. It can be turned off by the user. It can be completely ignored. It's a useless technique that too many companies are trying to pitch as security, and it just simply is not security. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the native in the iDevices. You have MDM, Mobile Device Management. And you've got a bunch of people saying, oh, we're going to use all this. And what they've effectively done is taken a native Apple application in iOS 4X and said, we're going to turn this into a business and use MDM. Well, MDM is not security. It has a couple features that are cool. We use some of those features. Absolutely. They are kind of nice. However, the problem is, number one, people are relying upon it as a security mechanism, but it does not provide security, anything needed at all.
I'm sorry, what is MDM?
MDM, Mobile Device Management.
Mobile
it's
Device
Management. Part of iOS 4X.
Okay.
And it's an Apple thing. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it allows you to enforce, password rules, length of password, that kind of stuff. It'll allow you to enforce, I can access iTunes, I can't. There's a handful of things that you can do with it. And it's a device management tool. And that's cool. But when you have 32 companies that have stood up in the last, 2 years that say, we do security and all it is MDM with a GUI, they're lying to themselves and to their customers. And that's, again, a confusing aspect of the industry at this point, which, in my opinion, is not needed because it's really completely inaccurate. And the biggest problem that you have with MDM, and this is back to the edict of Steve Jobs, that is the user controls his environment. These MDM companies can do anything the hell they want to do, but the user can turn it off. And by definition, none of that is security. The only way to do security in these devices, because of all of those purely technological limitations of these new environments, is to do it in the cloud. There is no other way.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.